The first round is on Owen's Recovery Science. Owen's Recovery Science is a single source
for PTs,
OTs,
ATCs,
DCs,
and other medical professionals
seeking certification
in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training. Find out more and get certified
at owensrecoveryscience.com.
We sit down with Australian Aussie Mark Maroli. Mark, a PhD in digital health. We talk social media, where digitalization of the world is headed for physical therapy, and we get into some Australian slang. Do you reckon?
The best conversations happen at happy hour.
Come on, let's drink beer.
Welcome to ours. This is the PT Pintcast, where we talk PT,
drink beer,
and record it.
Gotta go hard or go home.
Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Our next guest is a physiotherapist, digital health research academic, and consultant. He has a PhD in digital health and health informatics. His research interests center around technologies that enable active participation in health management, and he's equally passionate about ensuring physios move forward with digital healthcare confidently. He studied for a period at Michigan State, and despite being an Aussie, he does not drink Fosters or have a kangaroo as a pet. On the PT Pintcast, Mark Maroli. Mark, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
9 a.m. my time and 11 p.m. Your time. We have to do the different parts of the world. We have to obligatorily tell everybody what time it is for us.
Yeah, it's about 10 past 11 at night. So, you're getting ready to start your day. I'll be going to bed after this.
So I want to make sure everybody knows, since we're talking digital health and things online, we got to make sure we know how you can find Mark. Website, markmaroli.com, M-A-R-K-M-E-R-O-L-L-I, and that's at M-E-R-O-L-L-I-M on Twitter. And that's where I came across you, was your Twitter page. And you just have a unique, diverse background, and that's what I like to see brought to physiotherapy. How'd you get into this whole digital health thing, and what's it actually mean?
No, that's a really good point, Jimmy. And I think in a lot of ways, I sort of look back on the last few years of my life and I kind of think to myself, maybe was this a bit of a lucky accident? But part of me thinks it actually wasn't. I mean, yeah, I guess if I can give you some historical context.
Sure.
I've been a physiotherapist for like 11, 12 years now. And I think like a lot of physiotherapists, I was on a pretty clear trajectory for a long time, very passionate about orthopedics, musculoskeletal practice, and sport. As I said, I did end up doing a small internship at Michigan State, very passionate about sports, wanted to go to an Olympic Games, was working for Tennis Australia, professional basketball, soccer, football, all sorts of things. And long story short, everything changed when I moved to the UK. I lived like a lot of Aussies do. I got a visa and I went to live in London for 3 years.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that was around 2009, 10. Look, I guess the point I'm making is that I guess in Europe and the UK and a lot like America, the sort of technology landscape and its infiltration into healthcare had probably been a little bit more obvious at that point.
Okay. How so?
Well, look, I guess, again, in a bit of a roundabout way, I've always been technology enthusiastic, if you want to put it. I kind of studied some of those programming and stuff at school. And I think if I hadn't have gone into healthcare, I might have done something in IT. So I guess, it's not a complete accident. But sequence of whatever random events, I actually was working as a physical therapist or physio in London. But I also, and this is the weird part, I also ended up working part-time for a media agency. That happened because of friends who essentially bought a magazine that they wanted to turn into a digital publishing platform. And I thought, this is really cool. And it was around that time when Facebook pages were starting and Twitter had just started, 2008, 2009. Everyone was talking SEO, blogs, building websites. And I think I just really took to it like a duck to water. And, I was working for these guys, having a great time, still practicing as a PT. I think like all kind of good healthcare people, sort of thinking to myself, how does this marry? And is there a kind of synergy between healthcare and technology? And are people going on the internet to, to look up stuff about their health? And I mean, you can probably, tell similar stories, but I was starting to notice, every second patient that I was treating was telling me about YouTube videos they'd watched about, how to tape the knee or blogs they'd read or Facebook groups they'd join. And so, yeah, look, long story short, I had been working at the University of Melbourne teaching PT, and before I moved to London was about to start a PhD in looking at the thoracic spine. I ended up calling some of my mentors and saying, how about a PhD looking at how people use the internet and social media instead? And I kind of never really looked back. So, as I said, still a passionate PT, but a passionate digital PT now. Yeah, digital health is my life now.
So how would you describe, if you're going to describe it as someone who has who's outside of the healthcare field, what is digital health in a nutshell?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big buzzword, right? I almost try to avoid using it sometimes, but truth be told, we always look to America for this sort of stuff because you guys are streaks ahead. When I answer that question, a lot of the time, it really comes down to what it means to different people. The simple fact of the matter is that digital health can mean anything from big data analytics, you know, the data we collect and how we do that. That might be, you know, the data we track from sensors or devices, etc. It could be, you know, health information systems. For example, you know, electronic medical records that they use in a hospital or a clinic, even through to, say, digital technology that aids in therapy, right? So,
right.
You know, we might use, you know, apps, digital goniometry, pressure sensors, cardiac monitors, movement trackers, posture trackers. But at the same time, it's also, I guess, technology that's available to us, you know, to use in interventions and patient management. So, and that's the sort of stuff that got me into the field. So, you know, online consumer health information, social networks, apps, games, telehealth. You know, so I guess the point is that it really depends what your background is and what your interest is in. You'll probably define it differently.
You bring up all of those different aspects, all those things you listed as part of, you know, quote, digital health, that term that, you know, is a buzzword right now, but it kind of fits in PT because we like to think we're forward thinking. We like to think, you know, we think on our feet and we're pretty intelligent in terms of being able to adapt to new things. And I think we're also skeptical, you know, when someone says they have an app or a program that can do, you know, quote, everything, the cool part is we go try it and we tear it apart to make sure it's doing what they say it do, because we're smart enough to know that there probably isn't a magic bullet, but we're also smart enough to know that some of these digital aspects can help in some small way.
Hey, I'm all for accountability. And I mean, that's probably where PTs are, you know, are intelligent people. And yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, and I guess we'll keep talking about it. Like we need to embrace it more and we need to be open to it. And I think for the most part, people are heading that way. But at the same time, you know, we've got very strong backgrounds in medical care and evidence-based practice. And it's really, really important to scrutinize these things.
So let's go with the good and then we'll get to the bad. So how can it help? How can digital health help in aid and decision-making with those people that we're actually talking about, those patients?
I gave a presentation at our Australian Physiotherapy Association conference last year, and it was on a similar sort of line of thought and conversation track, essentially looking at future trends in digital health and how that impacts physio. And essentially, the kind of underpinnings of what I was trying to say at that conference was that I tend to try to look at it in two ways. I think on one hand, you look at it from an information availability perspective or paradigm. What I mean by that is I think at the core of digital health and, you know, what these different technologies can do for us is kind of create a greater means and way to collect information, store information, analyze health data. And obviously with that, you know, means there's a lot of opportunity to visualize data in ways that we just couldn't do a long time ago. But I mean, at the same time, I think what these technologies do, if you look at apps and look at social media, the internet, it's created all these new ways for us to connect. I guess, yeah, we have more information available to us through these different modalities, but at the same time, you know, the connection, the human capital, networks of people, and whether that be patient to patient, patient to provider, provider to provider, the world shrunk to a point, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, look at what we're doing right now, you know, with a microphone and a laptop, we're talking from around the world and it's not even hard.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it's just literally hey, ready to go, you ready to go online? Yep, good. It's a game changer if you think about it.
Are there any risks in bringing too much tech into that place where it's all about the human into practice?
Look, I mean, and this is kind of similar to what you were saying, you know, or what you touched on about 5 minutes ago. I guess, you know, the simple answer is there's always a risk, especially if you talk to our purist PTs and the traditionalists and those who are probably slightly more cautious. there's always a risk. I mean, health, anything that sort of a health intervention or a therapeutic intervention is precarious, regardless of whether it, you know, is in a technology context or not. We need to be safe, effective, et cetera, et cetera. But the simple fact of the matter is that health information, realistically, is probably the most sensitive personal information around, right? You know, there's a fairly strong expectation to safeguard it, to respect it. So I think that's probably one of the biggest ones, you know, in dealing with people, dealing with their information.
How can we best manage some of these risks? So we know the good, we know that there's good there, we know that there's risk, but like you said, there's risk comes with everything pretty much that we do, is risk getting out of bed in the morning. No, how can we effectively manage some of that risk with digital health?
No, look, and that's a good point. And I don't think that we need, you know, I don't know if you understand the colloquialism, but we say, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's a bit of a, you know, Aussies love a bit of slang, right? I think risk management, you know, good offense, defense, it's a great way to get ahead of it, and it doesn't mean we can, you know, discount digital health just on that basis of risk, you know. So I think, you know, some of the risk management stuff I usually try to say to people is information, data, you know, governance of technology, I think is probably the word I'm looking for. And I think that's one thing that, you know, the hospital system probably tends to do well. I myself have probably tended to have more of a background working in private PT clinics. I think one of the first, you know, major risk management steps, you know, is to have procedures in place for technology, for data, guidelines, you know, things that, you know, make sure that that technology is going to be used well, safely, effectively. And I think that's also a really big deal in sort of aiding our understanding when it comes to, you know, storing data about people and their privacy, security. At a more clinical level, I guess, I'm always an advocate, I think, for clinics, if we talk more at a clinic level, you know, in putting policies in place for the use of technology. So I think what I mean by that is, for example, in the so I created a social media for PTs course, you know, teaching PTs how to use social media. And one of the things that really try to get across in that sense is, you know, having a policy for your clinic outlining how technology or, you know, social media is used, whether that be by your staff or the type of behaviors that you'd expect from your community or your patients.
Yeah, a lot of times people or clinics or organizations will have those policies only after something has gone, quote, wrong, you know, and that's too late.
It's too late at that point. It's just a much smarter thing to do to get out in front of it. Along the same lines, I think we're talking education as well. You know, as PTs, I can't really speak specifically for your requirements in the States, but, you know, we're required to do a certain amount of professional development hours here. Yeah, and look, that might be, you know, a lot of clinics here tend to get in guest speakers or experts in, you know, the different fields. But it's also, you know, doing courses that are sort of more around technology. And that shouldn't necessarily be something that falls on, you know, the owner of a clinic or a hospital, CEO type of level, manager. I think there's an individual expectation now to be up to speed with what's out there. Like I said, I mean, the big alarm bell for me was, man, all my patients, you know, I've gone from 1 in 10 patient that's active online to, you know, 8 in 10. They're Googling stuff.
Look, my grandmother has a Facebook page and she comments, you know, more than I do. I mean, my grandmother's 93.
There you go. I mean, that's impressive. The argument of burying our head in the sand, Jimmy, I hate it. And there's still a lot of, you know, traditionalists out there that like to look at technology, the internet, if you want to say, as like a kind of an added extra. We like to pretend that our patients aren't online, but, you know, I think that's just pleading ignorance now. You know, one of the things I'm kind of constantly pushing for these days is more PD or PD requirements for, you know, technology. That's not necessarily even just at a really basic level. I mean, I know that one thing that the United States is really fantastic with is essentially postgraduate education in health informatics. I was in one of my PhD supervisors has been a professor at Cornell for the last 3 years. I spent a couple of weeks with him. I lectured in the health informatics program at Cornell University in New York last year. You guys have got undergrad and master level programs in health informatics, the types of programs that are designed for health professionals who want to upskill and develop formal qualifications in technology. That's fantastic. And that's, again, I use the word, it's a game changer.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, I'm nodding along with you because I agree. I think the more you get into it, the more it ultimately will hopefully, you know, trickle down to help or enhance that whole system and then help the patient. You know, that's the goal is, you know, we want to make all this information work for us. And I think we're now getting there. I think the more and more we do it, the easier and easier, the more user-friendly it is in the clinic, because we know we're always time constrained. We always have the time constraint in clinic. So the easier it can be, the more we can use it, the more we can leverage it. And, you know, technology literally changes every single day. It's amazing. Every time someone says there's an app for this, I'm like, there's no way it works as well as you say it does. And they do.
Yeah. Jimmy, it's something that I read today. So at the moment, I'm actually on top of my clinical practice. I'm working full time at one of our universities here in Melbourne. My title there is Academic Director of Digital Health. I'm trying to develop a major program in our health program around digital health. And I was looking at some information around study in health analytics. And something that I read on a blog that just really hit me like a ton of bricks today was that humans are actually probably the best risk management strategy. We have all these technologies, and these technologies produce a hell of a lot of data, but it's actually going to be the humans that are still able, the PTs who have studied PT, who know how to treat a patient and put that into context, are going to be the ones that know how to make sense of that information. Why not learn what these technologies are and how to use them?
And why not do it right? Like you said, why not make a course out of it and learn from the people who are actually doing it right? Want to thank our sponsors, Aureus Medical Staff, and you can find them online at aureusmedical.com. That's AureusMedical.com. Mark, these guys are awesome, man. I know you've spent some time in the States. They're simply there to find physical therapists jobs in the U.S. That's it. There's positions in all 50 states. So if you're going to come back, I know you did some time at Michigan, man, but you know, Hawaii is pretty nice too, or Alaska is pretty awesome.
Hawaii is a bit closer to
you. Yeah, a little bit for you guys. Great way to see the country, perfect way to expand your resume and continue learning. We actually had a couple questions online, since we're talking about digital, about, hey, what do you do about your continuing education money? Because here in the States, Mark, you have to, according to what state you live in, you have to get certain amount of those hours before your license can be renewed. And a lot of times, if you're a travel therapist, people are wondering, hey, if I'm going around, and a lot of times the assignments are about 13 weeks, you know, how do I get a company to pay for some of that or all of that? Well, Aureus actually helps you do that. They've got thousands of dollars of financing if you stick with them and do some travel assignments. So check them out. I mean, I just love, you know, pushing a company like this, because their job is just finding you jobs. So you've gone through all the hassle to become a PT, and now you want to go explore the country. They can do that. AureusMedical.com. Or if you want to give them a call, you get your own dedicated recruiter. It's not an answering service. You get someone finding a job in the setting you want to do, the type of clinic, the location that you want. So reach out to them. That's AureusMedical.com to get that recruiter. 1-800-340-2619. We want to get into social media. You know, we talked about digital health in the first half of the show. I'm going to take a quick break, and I want to get into social media, because I think a lot of people think I know how to do it. It's super easy. My 93-year-old Gammy does it, but how do we do it right in this space called physical therapy? I want to get into that with Mark just after this on PT Podcast. Hey Siri.
I'm listening, Jimmy.
How many countries has the show been heard in?
The PT Pinecast has been heard in 112 different countries.
And how many downloads do we usually get?
It averages more than 49,000 downloads per month.
Siri, what PT podcast is the most popular?
The PT Pinecast is the best physical therapy podcast in the world, according to Jimmy's mom.
Well, at least my mom likes it.
Calling all physical therapists.
Expand your knowledge and your practice with Rock Tape. Join their medical professional program at no cost to you.
And start getting 40% off retail pricing right now.
Just head to rocktape.com and click Become a Medical Pro
to get 40% off retail right now.
Rock Tape helps athletes of every level go stronger longer
with the best kinesiology tape, cutting edge education, and fitness support products.
Physical therapists,
go to rocktape.com/start
and use the code PT Pinecast when you sign up
for an extra 10% off your first order. Rock Tape, the best kinesiology tape.
Thought about a career as a traveling physical therapist? Aureus Medical Group is a leading healthcare staffing agency offering full-time travel and direct hire career opportunities for PTs nationwide. Whether you're a new graduate or seasoned therapist, an exciting career is waiting for you. Dream it and live it with Arias. To learn more, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. All right, back on PT Pinecast with Dr. Mark Maroli of Australia. Say something. Give me some cool Aussie slang, man. Give me something I can say here in America that'll make me sound like I've got some Aussie street cred.
Some Aussie slang. Jeez, you're killing me, Jimmy. Well, we always say one of the things that I think everyone struggles to understand, we say is, you know, you reckon, as in like serious?
Do
really?
You reckon? Do it again. Say it again so I can get it.
Do you reckon?
Man, as soon as I try to do, any accent, it just sounds fake as hell. There's no way I could pull that off.
That's
so we've got a segment on the show we ask everybody, Mark. It's called Three Questions from our sponsors, Arias Medical Staffing. Since you're not in the U.S., you know, if you could come to the U.S. and be a PT for a travel assignment, because Arias does that, where in the U.S. would you want to explore?
Yeah. Look, I love the U.S. I'm not just saying that because I'm on a podcast with you. I've actually been to the US a few times. And as I said, I was most recently there in November last year. I did a bit of travel and a bit of teaching at Manhattan Cornell, that is, the medical school. I love New York. I love New York City, but that's a bit too, I think, cliche for me to say. If I was to sort of come back, I'd probably just love to explore just places that I haven't been. I'm still in touch with a lot of the guys that I was over there at Michigan State with, and not that there's really any pattern to where they live, but I'd love to go and visit some of them. And you know, one of the guys is in Pittsburgh, another one of the boys is in Virginia. As a tourist, you always tend to go to LA, New York. I did spend a Christmas in Houston.
Yeah.
That was cool. You know, that was cool. But I'm due to come back.
Actually, let us know. We'll spread the word. And just to let everybody know, all the places that Mark mentioned are places that Arias can get you a job as a PT. Second question, what's something that you've read that's really inspired you?
Like, I actually love reading. Actually, it's something I try to, you know, find a little bit of time for, especially on a break or a vacation. I actually try to take a bit of chill out time when I can and clear my mind. And it's probably going to sound a little bit philosophical, but sort of read not long ago The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, all about essentially bringing ourselves into the present moment and stopping our thought process, basically. But I also like to read a lot of stuff that makes me think in different ways. So I probably subscribe to a lot of the Malcolm Gladwell books.
Yeah.
You know, The Tipping Point, Blink, Outliers, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, those are good. That's a good trio there from Gladwell.
I don't know if you're the same, but I tend to read stuff that makes me think completely differently to PT, but sometimes it helps me think about what I do in healthcare, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, does what I like to think that, you know, we're doing right now, which is bringing something different into the field.
Yeah.
Who's someone in the field of physical therapy that we, the audience, should know more about?
Well, Glenn Rusko is someone I think, and again, staying true to my technology roots and doing things a bit differently. So Glenn has pioneered, and why I like what he's doing is he's thinking a little bit like you and me. That's Glenn Rusko, R-U-S-C-O-E. He is the domain licensee for the .physio web domain. I don't know if you've come across that, but again, you know, we have all sorts of web domains, .health, .America, .Australia. Glenn saw an opportunity a few years ago when they released the .physio domain. He took a risk and became the licensee of that. And the overall passion project there was to, again, drive visibility and brand protection for the profession. Again, that's a shout out because it's someone that's, I think, done something quite high level.
Yeah. Is Glenn a PT as well? Is he a physio too?
Yeah, he's a physio. So
he just did exactly what we're talking about. He saw, you know, an opportunity where, I mean, even something is, you know, quote, I'm using air quotes here, simple as figuring out that .physio could help. I mean, who knows where that can go in 3, 5, 10 years and how that can help getting that word out in front of so many people.
And look, Jimmy, I mean, as I said, I have no vested interest in it, but, you know, I own my own name, .physio, markmaroli.physio. I haven't built a website on it, but again, from a personal brand protection thing, I think it's great. I put my social media course on there, socialmedia.physio. I think, you know, check it out. I think it's a great way for people to brand themselves and say, hey, I'm a proud PT.
Yeah.
And I actually think, you know, in this day and age of so many websites and search engine optimization, it's a great way for people to find you.
Yeah, it's a good way to differentiate. I like that. All right, that's three questions right there with Mark. Mark, I want to get into something similar but different than the first half of the show. We talked about digital health in the beginning. Second set, want to talk about social media because I think this is something that physios and physical therapists, we're doing more and more. What are maybe some best practices or ways that we can really make it useful and make it a best use of our time? What do you look at in the terms of the social media space for PTs?
It's a really interesting space, and I think the first thing to say is that I'm generally pretty enthusiastic about social media. As I said before, it's actually what gave me my start in this kind of discipline of digital health. Essentially, like I said, was kind of one of the content areas, was the content area of my PhD. For the most part, I'm pretty enthusiastic about all the things that it can do. The most obvious things in PT and uses of social media like that I think people would resonate with is, you know, the fact that we can reach a hell of a lot more people with our messages about health, creating communities, all those Twitter followers that you've got. Would you have all of them if you just had a sign-up mailing list? So, you know, audience reach, obviously, but ways to connect with people. Look at what we're doing. We connected via Twitter. Mm-hmm. And that's not just necessarily at a professional level, but again, we can connect with patients, with our community, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the things that I'm starting to really implore physios to do is to look to social media from a knowledge translation perspective. If I can highlight one example is that I actually just wrote a paper with a colleague. We've just submitted it for review for a journal. And we're looking at how, you know, if we move away from social media just purely as a I've got a Facebook page or I'm on Twitter. If you look at what social media has actually done from us from a professional knowledge perspective, it's completely disrupted the information dissemination channel. Once upon a time, we needed to have a login and a password and hope that our universities gave us access to journal databases. Yeah. Now, rapid spread of information, journal articles being tweeted about before they're even published. You know, the idea of publish or perish type of thing, death by Twitter. If an article isn't tweeted or liked, you know, it probably correlates to it not being cited as much. The simple fact of the matter is that social media isn't a toy anymore. It's not necessarily just a, you know, I've got an Instagram or a Facebook just to post photos about last night. Yeah, it's taken its place at the table, so to speak, and we're using it professionally now.
Yeah, I mean, you can leverage some really, really great ideas. You know, I mean, crowdfunding, you know, spreading information like journals, like you said. And, you know, there's a guy out of France who does these great infographics on papers within physiotherapy, and he just explains the results with graphics. But that's a way that people communicate, which is, you know, almost cartoon-like. But at the root of it, he's sharing scientific information and just with Twitter.
And that's exactly it. And that infographics, the visual medium, is exactly something we talked about in this journal piece. I say I won't talk about it too much because it's still under embargo, so to speak. But I say to people when I teach them social media that we're a visual profession. If you think about what we do, I mean, we're demonstrating exercises, we're demonstrating treatment techniques, we're showing people how to do things. You're seeing some really savvy people out there recognize that, and they're turning to YouTube, they're turning to Instagram, Snapchat, Pinterest, and they're actually leveraging these tools professionally and not just, as I said, as a kind of fun thing in their personal life.
Now, I want to make sure that people know that there are pitfalls out there to using it, and let's tell them about it now before they trip over one of these. So what are some pitfalls or some things you should steer away from, and how can they be managed on social media?
The thing that probably first comes to mind for me, and you just see it too often, I'd be keen to hear what you think. For some reason, I think when people have a computer screen in front of them, professionals included, PTs included, some people just tend to kind of lose all rhyme or reason with what they're doing. Almost like they've just lost that filter or buffer, you know, and all of a sudden there's nothing between them and the outside world. You know, the pitfalls are probably that we see, unfortunately, I guess, episodes or incidences of breaches in confidentiality and of patients and privacy, some yucky cases of defamation, inappropriate friending of patients and inappropriate behavior. It's really, really interesting. And as I said, as an educator as well, who teaches PT students at university, we actually spend time with the students now, reminding them that they are essentially professional people now and that they represent the profession. I know it sounds like a bit of a cliche, but they're going to be going for jobs and how do you want to be portrayed on the internet?
Yeah. I mean, employers and future employers more and more are doing something really, really easy, which is just Googling people they're going to be interviewing. And that stuff that you put out there, that inappropriate tweet 3 years ago, that lives on, unfortunately.
You know what? It's not even the inappropriate tweets. It's the inappropriate photos, unfortunately.
I tend to do
a bit of a, I do it every year. It's kind of become a bit of my thing. It's a bit of a shock and awe tactic. I always say with our final year students, when I go to teach them this responsible use stuff, I get up in front and I say to them, I asked the course convener to give me a list of all the students in the lecture theatre so that I could, look them up on Facebook and
They immediately start to sweat at this point, don't they?
I'm going to show you some of your photos up on the big screen. All you need to do is look around and look at the faces of impending. Right. And sweating and faces like ghosts. And I don't do that. It's more to prove a point.
Sure.
The point is, I think if you get that like horrible sinking feeling in your stomach, that it might mean, hey, I probably should check my Facebook or my Instagram and take some of those photos down. I know employers, I'm at that stage now where we're owning clinics and we're managers, we're hiring people, colleagues are hiring people. And I know colleagues that haven't hired people based on someone's social media profile. I don't mean for that to sound too dramatic, but it's actually a thing now.
Well, you got to want that person to represent your company. And you're saying that, this person, when they thought nobody was looking, did this or said this, and now they're going to come work for me and they're going to have my logo, on their shirt. And they're going to say that they work for me. That's a big red flag. I mean, I remember, the advice that I got from a great boss by the name of Chris Lloyd, runs a bunch of really big radio stations in his career here in the US. And he just said, listen, would you do it in front of your boss? Would you say it in front of your boss? Or would you say it just like you had alluded to what you do in class? Would you show that picture on stage in front of a bunch of professionals? If the answer is no, or even if you have to think about it, if you're saying maybe, probably don't do it, right? I mean, it's just simple.
Well, it's not the thing that we say over here, and we call it the elevator test. Would you say it in a crowded elevator?
That's great. I love it.
If you wouldn't, you probably wouldn't say it anywhere else on social media.
Right.
We've already talked about it, and this is sort of the idea around risk management. I mean, one is educating ourselves and our staff. But like I said, the other one, and I know it probably seems more simple, it seems more complicated than it needs to be, but I'm a firm advocate of social media policies. And that could be a large hospital department, a community health setting. It could be a private clinic. If you're the boss, why not put a social media policy in front of your staff that outlines what you expect of them and what's expected of them professionally, including that folder, your HIPAA compliance or, APTA social media expectations, make them read it, make them sign it.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. I like it a lot. All right, so we've kept you long enough. The reason or the way we kind of crossed paths was actually I had seen you do some wrap-ups of the World Confederation of Physical Therapy, the WCPT Congress, which was just in South Africa, and I was bummed that I missed it. But you were wrapping up, how the fact that we had gotten trending. And so where do you see social media being able to help? What's the one lane that we can do the most good with leveraging social media?
Leveraging social media for the profession or?
Yeah, let's do the profession because that's the stage that we're on now. Now everybody's on the world stage if you're on Twitter and the WCPT. I mean, that's it, man. That's the United Nations of PT.
One is to get more PTs online, signing up to Twitter, et cetera, and joining that conversation. And they don't necessarily be active. You can still be quite a passive participant and sort of seeing what's going on.
Until you want to jump in.
Until you feel comfortable jumping in. We can really use social media successfully, and this is exactly what we've done with WCPT. Check out hashtag GlobalPT. That's essentially an initiative we started at the WCPT Congress 2 years ago. And it's essentially just using social media, a hashtag on Twitter, to create a community of practice. You know, you could be, and I've got colleagues, there are colleagues that were at WCPT, colleagues here in Australia, in the UK, that are working in Parkinson's, that are working in women's health, pediatrics. And, you know, they've all used Facebook or Twitter to create communities of practice. And these communities are thriving. Look at what's happening in the States with, you know, hashtag choose PT.
Yep.
It's just they're great ways to mobilize the troops, yeah. And get people talking about important issues.
Yeah.
I think that's probably in a nutshell, Jimmy.
That's the big one, yeah. All right, there's no way I can let you out of here being the digital guy without you telling me one or two apps that you use and that PT should use. We have a feature here that we just started on the show called What's Appening, where I just take a look, short 3-4 minute episodes where I review an app. Give me one or two I'd need to check out.
Do they use PhysiTrack?
I haven't heard of that one. What's that?
PhysiTrack, it's essentially a rehab management, monitoring, and training tool. So I think it's really cool. It's an app that we can use as practitioners to essentially set a patient's exercise program. They can then obviously view those exercises, videos, photos of those exercises at home, and also, you know, track their adherence and their pain levels. So it's my thing again about, you know, increasing that information available to us in the consult. I really like that one. From a non-PT perspective, check out Scoop It. Scoop It is an amazing content aggregation platform. I've been using it. That's Scoop, SCOOP.IT.
Okay.
I've been using it probably for about 5 or 6 years, and I literally use it to create. It's how do I explain it? It's like an online newspaper. Instead of searching the internet for a million things and, you know, Googling it and hoping you find what you're looking for, you pump in all your keywords and your social media handles and pages where you know you're going to find the things you want, and it, you know, it just provides you with relevant content, and then you can kind of bookmark it and tag it and aggregate it. It's awesome. It's great for your clinic, but even just for your own staying up to date.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out. All right, so every episode that we record, we call a pint, and before we're done with the pints, we love shots here in the U.S., Mark. So parting shot of wisdom.
This is the parting shot.
Let's look to the future. What's a future prediction, either in the digital health or the social media space, something there that you think is coming down the line that we should pay attention to?
Cool, good question. Look out for the fact that we're going to be essentially connected and online 24/7, 7 days a week. It's not going to be, you know, have I got Wi-Fi? You know, I don't know if you heard the term the Internet of Things.
Yeah.
You know, that's coming. It's essentially the idea that all of our devices, everything is just, I don't know if it's good or bad, Jimmy, but, you know, that we're going to be connected all the time. And I think because of that, whether that be monitoring of patients, you know, self-management, treatment, I think the lines are going to start blurring more and more between clinical management and self-management. It's not going to be physio in the clinic and then self-management at home. It's all going to be one thing.
Yes.
There you go.
All right.
Is that controversial enough for you?
I like it very much. Do you reckon?
Yeah, good.
I try to use it in context, you know what I mean? Dr. Mark Maroli, find him online, his digital footprint, markmaroli.com, and I guess markmaroli.physio, is that right too?
Look, I haven't set it up yet, so go with markmaroli.com.
There we go. And then on Twitter, MEROLLIM, definitely follow him there, and we want to make sure we let you know you can get that course that you were alluding to in terms of physiotherapists and social media. Find the link to Connecting Physios on Mark's website.
Yeah, that's socialmedia.physio.
Real quick course that you can take that'll give you the quick and dirty and make sure you're not falling into those pitfalls that we mentioned. Mark, appreciate it. Don't think this is going to be the last time we talk. And I like where this thing's going in terms of connecting the world, and we can do that as physios.
Jimmy, all, you know, cheers to you, man, because more physios have got to be doing what you're doing and spreading the word. Congratulations. It's an awesome initiative.
Thanks. Appreciate you coming on the show, Mark.
Thanks, Jimmy. We'll talk soon.
Our home on the internet.
ptpintcast.com.
Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
The PT Pintcast is a product of PT Pintcast, LLC.
It is hosted and produced by PT Pintcast's CEO, Jimmy McKay, and CBO, Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
This has been another pour from the PT Pintcast.
The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.
Hey, PT Pintcast listeners, I'm Eric Mara.
And I'm J.W. Matheson.
And we're from PT Inquest, a podcast that is also a journal club. Each week, we review and dissect a recent article that applies to physical therapy practice.
Or physiotherapy, as the weirdos on the other side of the pond call it.
Yeah, which pond are you talking about?
The Atlantic, or the Pacific, even Canada for that matter, everywhere but here.
Right. So check us out on the PT Podcast Network at ptpodcast.com.
You can become our seventh listener.
Yeah, J.W., we're down to five now. Steve, stop listening because he was getting annoyed with all your puns.
No puns. That reminds me of a sad story today. Abandoned cheese factory in France. It blew up. Horrible explosion. All that was left was debris.
Yeah, on second thought, probably better for people not to listen to the show.